You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul and I have the pleasure of bringing on Mr. Vic Moss. Vic, how are you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you for your time. It's always good to see you, and it's always good to see your Inspire in the background.
I'm not flying it. Might as well look at it.
That's right. That's right. Well, recently, Vic wrote an article, and he did something. He put out into the world a thought that many of us pilots are thinking. And I brought him on the show today to discuss this article because I think it really highlights a central issue here in the industry. And the question that he wrote is a drone pilot civil disobedience movement brewing? And I wanted to bring Vic on to explain his article, explain what his intentions are, and why you should know. So, Vic, again, I respect you very much so ever since meeting you at the air show in Greeley, right? That was Greeley.
It was Greeley. Long time ago.
So tell me the premise behind this thing. Let's get started with why before we talk about what.
Well, the why was just to get my frustration on paper, really, or on a computer. Somebody had mentioned something about a revolt in one of the other groups. And it's something that had been brewing in my mind for a while. And I really didn't think that it would be too terribly appropriate to write. But I just finally decided, you know, heck, you know, whatever. Let's just do it. So I wrote it down. I wrote it in about 3 hours, published it. And I think 1,000 people have read it since Friday, or 800 and something last time I checked. So it struck a chord. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's definitely striking a chord with people. But before we go too deep into what we're talking about, we should probably tell everyone what this article talks about. I mean, Vic, it's funny, the opening line actually gives it, it's like you almost give like a warning before you read it, because he says the tone of this article is not necessarily directed at any individual within the FAA. It's more along the lines of an overall condemnation of the process and the bureaucracy that totally kinks the colon of most commercial UAS operators. If that doesn't give you a fair warning, I don't know what does.
Well, you know, I actually took some writing classes at George Mason University about 100 years ago. And one of the professors said, hey, you know, your first sentence better grab the, you know, better grab the reader or else they're not going to keep reading. It's like, yeah, I think that one works.
I think it does too.
Grab them by the colon, right?
So when you saw the revolt on another page, what was the other person talking about?
Same thing. Just the frustration with the system, how broken it is, how long it takes to get a simple authorization. I think in one of the examples, it's like, let's say you're a quarter mile in Delta airspace and you need to shoot a roof for Allstate Insurance, whatever. You have to get clearance to fly 20 feet over the roof of a house if a tree is 40. And it doesn't make sense. You're going to lose work and they're going to hire somebody to do it, you know, whether it's a 107 operator or not. And that's frustration.
Let me ask you a question, Vic. Have you ever lost any business to work that was in, say, controlled airspace?
Absolutely. I think everybody has, whether they know it or not.
I have too.
And I know some people have lost thousands of dollars worth of work. Yep.
Hi.
I think it was 2 months of a project that I would have never been able to get permission for through the portal because it was literally a mile off of the runway of an airport, perpendicular. So I wasn't in flight paths. And finally, the FAA guy at that airport, not ATC, but the FAA guy at that airport, and I won't mention any names, said, call me when you're flying. I'd rather have you up there. I'd rather know you're up there flying safe than not knowing who's up there flying and cause problems. Yeah. So that's my wink and a nod thing that I mentioned in the article. And I know I've lost other work, but you know, that's fine.
Just to clarify for everyone, this entire article is about the fact that JO 72023, this memo. Yeah, I laughed too. This memo that went out from FAA Washington that really strips ATC's power away from making decisions for drone pilots to acquire permission to fly in controlled airspace. I want to make sure I say controlled, not restricted, nothing
assigned
like that.
Assigned to that airport, right?
Exactly. So this is all about the system of getting permission to fly and that we're losing thousands in business. And, you know, recently I've been trying to figure out how many commercial operators there are versus certified commercial operators.
Right. Right.
We heard recently the FAA's numbers went up to 37,000, you know, what is it, registered commercial pilots, although there's 800,000 registered drones now. And we know the sales numbers are probably quadruple, if not 8-10 times that number.
I'd say probably at least twice. I don't know if I go 8 or 10, but you know, what is it? Who knows? You know?
Yeah.
You could throw the sales together, all DJI and Unique and both Karmas that sold. And go ahead and put all that stuff together. But there's gotta be over a couple million. If only 100,000 pilots or operators are registered. So maybe each of them have 2 or 3 drones. Who knows? Right.
No, it's a good question. So in your article, you talk about, you know, there are groups that are directly responsible for this situation coming about the way it has. How do you see that? I mean, you talk about the AMA here.
The AMA is a big chunk of why, or a big reason why the 101 exists and why the hobbyist rules are so different than commercial rules. And like in the article, I'm not saying that that's, you know, it's bad. It didn't work out right the way it was supposed to, but AMA did what they were supposed to do. They've got a very large membership of very experienced, mostly experienced hobbyists who didn't want to have to deal with the FAA hassle that we're dealing with. I don't think anybody did, but they did not follow it through to its logical conclusion, given the fact that, or given the knowledge now of how many people are going to be up there with drones. And so, yeah.
Gotcha. Now, one of the other things that you mentioned here in the article, too, is that you say that some of the airport operators, some of the ATC operators are so fed up with the system that they're creating their own systems.
The operators themselves are not creating their own system, but they are telling some pilots, 107 pilots, just to call. They'll deal with it. They'll say, okay, fine. You know, we'd rather have you up there. You know what you're doing than have somebody else take the project. And we have no idea they're there because they're not going to call. They may or may not be 107 operators. If they're not 107 operators, they may or may not have lost link procedures or have any idea what airspace they're actually in. They just drive up and they don't know they're 3/4 of a mile off the end of a runway. And they're going to go up to 200 feet, which, you know, in theory, 3/4 of a mile, 200 feet might be okay, but it might not. Especially if you got student pilots on the air.
Especially if you're on approach.
Any on approach, that's right. Or even on a final or leg or any of those kind of things. Downwind leg. So they would rather have those ATC personnel, and even, like I said, the FAA person at this particular airport would rather have permission given by them to a 107 pilot than wait for the whole portal system to work.
Now, you and I know about some apps that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
There's some information that we're going to talk about in a podcast later this week, showcasing that ESRI map that kind of debuted on the.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that debuted on the internet, and then they quickly took off. Like, oh wait, no one can see that.
We didn't mean to do that. Sorry.
Yeah, luckily I took a couple screenshots, so I'm going to share it with everyone on the show. But I think that would have been a major step forward in having a very simplistic, easy way to get airspace authorizations. Now, for all of you out there who are not really kind of familiar with what's going on, responsible commercial 107 pilots have to get authorization to fly. We have not been able to do that in a quick, easy, efficient manner when manned pilots can get this permission in seconds, if not minutes, rather than 90 days. No one's going to have 90 days to really say, hey, I need permission to fly. So then they came up with this order, JO7200. You've got to go online in order to get permission, thus stripping away from ATC. That's where we are here today. From that, we've heard, okay, maybe we'll have apps to get instantaneous access. We had Kevin Morris on the show talking about that. Then we heard that AirMap just got $25 million in funding and was showcasing their maps to the FAA 2 weeks ago. Now we're hearing that December 31st is going to be the time when the official app releases by the FAA. But if we look at, you know, historical data, the FAA's ability to create apps is very prominently shown in Before You Fly, which in my eyes and by the laughter of Vic Moss is a clear indicator of its success, which is very little.
Very little.
So,
and the December 31st timeline, actually that was Huerta's timeline. He did say that, and that was via Hoot Gibson. During a Q&A, I'd asked him that, and it's only going to be 10 airports.
Only 10 airports by December 31st.
That is what Huerta wants, is a minimum of 10 airports, and then every 28 or 56 days, other additional airports will be released on that app. Whatever app they choose, it might be AirMap, might be somebody else.
So at what point is this ridiculousness getting in the way of economic development?
Let's see what J200.23 was signed October. What? No, yeah. September something. That's right. That's when it started. That's when it started, because that created the whole portal issue, and the portal issue is the one that just messes with anybody who needs more than, you know, they're saying 30 days now. I've got 8 or 9 out that are pushing 6 weeks right now. Haven't heard boo from. So the 30 days is wrong, but that's when it started. It was right at the very get go. And then they didn't even start, December 8th, December 9th is when they finally started releasing Bravo. So it started right at the beginning.
That's, yeah, it's crazy. I just think of the Sherman Antitrust Act, you know, the law that prevents the restriction of trade or supply in the United States.
FAA might have an immunity from that.
How so?
I don't know enough about it. Huh. Oh, government agency.
Well, if any of you law students out there want to look this up, this is Statute 209 from 15 U.S.C., Section 1 through 7, the Sherman Antitrust Act. It just makes me think, though, Vic, because like you've said before, so many people are losing business. I've lost business. You've lost business. You know, the airport ATC guys are realizing that this is such a big problem. Instead of risking safety, they're going around this issue. And yet we're seeing major players who have billions of dollars getting what they want very quickly. You know, I give CNN as the example, which I always joke about CNN's drone footage, because the first time they had drone footage, look at our drone footage. Look at this bridge shot with drone footage. Look, the drone got close to the bridge. We didn't give you any beautiful cinematic motion, but look at this drone footage. And it was just like, wow, guys.
Well, that was at the infancy. So, you know, just a different perspective, you know, never mind the movements or any of that kind of stuff. But yeah, the different perspective in itself was pretty wow, but that got old pretty quick.
Definitely got old pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So when we say, bringing this back full circle, when we say that there is almost a revolt on our hands, a civil disobedience, what does that look like to you? I mean.
Oh, gosh.
I asked that question because we've said a long time ago, if you remember this conversation a very long time ago, that if the FAA doesn't handle drones properly, mm-hmm. it's going to be just like the FCC trying to register CB radios way back in the day. No one does it.
No one does it. No one did it. I didn't. We had a little mobile one we used. This was back in high school for me, so before your days anyway. We should probably first of all say right off the bat that neither me or you or Drone You officially recognize we don't want to make this happen. We're just kind of putting what could happen. So this isn't an official okay from anybody here, just to make people happy. But what's going to happen and what is happening, I will guarantee it's happening. I know it's happening right now, is the drone pilots, the 107 operators, just saying, screw it. I'm going to fly this because I know it's safe, and I'm not going to get authorization in time. And it's going to lose, whether, you know, it's a $100 roof job or a $1,500 full day shoot or $3,000 full day gig. If they know that it's going to be a safe flight, they ought to be able to do it. We've got the training. And that's what is happening. Whether or not it's organized, no, it's not organized. But the FAA, I don't think, is going to do anything. I don't think they can. I mean, they can. You know, they've got the authority. But if they're
Hold on. Let's talk about this for a second, because you've said they can and they've got the authority. But the question is if they will. Why do you say that? Are you talking about the David Boggs case?
No. I'm talking about whether or not the FAA is going to actually do anything to non-107 operators who are out there doing it. Why would they then go after 107 operators? They're not going to have the manpower to do it. And I don't think they want to. I think the people in the field, the people you and I talk to, who are actually pretty stinking cool people, you mentioned one of them, they're done. They're frustrated just as much as we are. It's the process that is the issue. And it's the bureaucracy upon bureaucracy that's known as the FAA that is the issue. I don't think FISDO, I don't think ATC personnel, unless there is a safety issue, will do anything.
Yeah,
I don't think they care. That's me. I don't have any empirical evidence.
I've been told that directly by some personnel mm-hmm. of the FAA. But
yeah,
I mean, maybe the question then is, okay, so we've got this problem. What do you think is the solution, or the unintended consequences if there is no solution?
The solutions. What can the FAA do? I actually came up with four of them in my article. The first and foremost thing they need to do is rescind J0720023, or at very least amend it, and give those ATC that want the authority, give it back to them. Say, okay, yeah, go ahead. You guys can do this if you want. You can designate. They already have a POC, person of contact, for the UAS industry. So they already have that in place. And all they need to do is Ms. Hendel just has to say, hey, you know what? Let's go 7200.23A, B, whatever.
Well, and we've already seen the existence of 7200.23A. I mean,
right. We don't know exactly what it is yet, though.
Exactly.
And maybe that's what it is, and that'd be awesome. But, you know, even the towers that you're going to talk to, or it'd have to be towers. It couldn't be managers because they're not in control of the sky. But the towers that they talk to, maybe they can say, okay, you have to call us 24 hours in advance. You have to file a DROTM. We're not busy between 2 and 6, so call us between 2 and 6, whatever, whatever that is. And that word will get out among the community, among the local community, because we're all a pretty tight-knit group of guys and gals. So that word would get out pretty darn quick. And it's strictly procedural. So there's not going to be any NPRM to put out.
That begs the question. In fact, I wanted to bring this up because I saw some guy arguing with you that the order J0720023 was law and that you had to go online. It was law. Would you like to correct him?
I did.
Can you explain to our listeners why it's not law?
It is not law because it's a procedure. It's the way that Air Traffic Control Division, I believe, is Ms. Hendel's division, Heather Hendel. They have methods that they would like pilots to use, whether it's drone pilots, whether it's manned pilots, whether it's ground personnel. There's procedures that you use to contact whoever you need to contact when you're in the airspace or on their property. And so that's procedural. The law states in 107 that you can't fly without ATC authorization in the listed airspaces. That is the law. The way that they make it happen is the procedure, and it is not law. If there were an issue with permission given by ATC not using the portal, then they would be in violation of an employee procedure. It would not be a law issue. The pilot themselves would be covered because they got the permission they needed, but the person who gave you permission may get in trouble for it.
So let me ask you this. Do you think, because by the way, there is another map from ESRI that has the UASFM. I'm waiting for the link.
UASFMs.
UASFMs.
Red map. It's quicker and easier.
Yeah. So is the solution then going, I mean, do you see unintended consequences of pilots just calling ATC and the solution, I mean, already coming to fruition where we're saying, look, this government BS isn't working and like it's causing a real problem. It's a problem for society as well because it's making our airspace less safe. Right. And if pilots are quote unquote, still legal by getting the permission from ATC, do you see the unintended consequence of pilots just more and more of them calling ATC and getting this stuff done on their own?
I think it's a possibility. And that's something I've always kind of wondered about, because that's one of the main reasons that they put the portal into place, is because they didn't want the towers to be overwhelmed with a bunch of 107 operators calling them. Well, 101 operators already are supposed to anyway, so they're already calling in theory. But I think they grossly overestimated how many calls they were going to get every day. And I think that's being played out simply because of how many authorizations have been given. We're not seeing the thousands and thousands of calls a day that FAA said would happen. And maybe that's because nobody's doing it. And maybe that will happen once they do open that up. But then that would also then get back to, hey, you know, if that airport is getting overwhelmed, they can shut it down and they can say, okay, you have to do this now. You have to do the portal because we just can't handle the volume of 107 operators calling us.
Yeah.
So that puts it back into the seat, the permission into the hands of ATC, the individual ATCs, which even in 107 says that they have the best knowledge to decide what is safe in their airspace.
Which is true. The local guys definitely do. So going back to the proposed solutions, what is another proposed solution you have?
I think if the FAA would enforce the illegal operations, you know, and all they're going to get is a letter. We all know that. That's fine. But start doing some of that stuff. But even that, unless they figure out and release, or either redo the memo or start giving instant authorizations, that's really not going to do anything either.
Because you said also here, enforce the federal preemption.
Yes.
Prosecute someone who shoots down a drone.
That would make my life so much easier. Not the shooting down part. That's David's issue. And David, if you hear this, we're behind you, bud.
If you do hear this, we are going to do that whole project together to make sure that you have the support you need.
That would be fun, because he deserves it. He's a good guy.
It's happening. It's just in progress.
So then, if they would just enforce preemption, and all it would take, and I've emailed them this, and I got, oh yes, thank you. We'll pass it up the pass it up the food chain. Pass your idea up the food chain. Is designate one person. Within the FAA hierarchy, even one of their district council would be awesome. One person is, hey, we got an email. Let's use Frisco, Colorado, because I'm having to deal with them right now. Is they have illegal, unenforceable regulations on the books. And if it would be one email with an FAA person, or from an FAA person with the title of counsel or something along those lines, saying, you know, guys, you can't do this, but this is what you can do, that would just kill it right there.
So do you think that would help in the Singer case?
I think if they would just get on Dr. Singer's side and just bring somebody in, that would help with the Singer case.
And you think it would also be really relevant that the FAA also made an opinion in the... So for people who don't understand what's going on with the David Boggs case, David Boggs had his drone shot down in Kentucky by the drone slayer. The drone slayer openly lied about the entire situation, and it went to federal court. And what happened in federal court, Vic?
It was kicked back because it wasn't filed under the right jurisdiction. David's lawyers, whatever, made a tactical error, I think, in trying to file it under one way, but it needed to go another. I don't know enough about it. But basically the judge said that, well, this really isn't a federal case. You need to file it this way. Nobody won, nobody lost in that ruling. It was just simply a, you need to do it in this court rather than the court you're in now ruling. So, you know, the drone slayer says, hey, yeah, we won. It's like, no, dude, you didn't. There was no ruling against you or for you, so you're just back to square one. Nobody won. Well, David lost because he's the one having to fit the bill. But that's what happened. And so it's not dead. It's just going to be rewritten.
Gotcha. And you think it's important that the FAA actually step up and say something, maybe become expert witnesses, because it is their federal law that they're trying to uphold, right?
Well, it would be a DOJ issue, probably FBI. But the FAA, I think, would have to instigate it. Say, hey, you know, dear FBI, go arrest Mr. Meredith and throw his butt in jail.
Let me ask you one more question. Do you think if You know, with the new presidential administration being so forthright about removing regulations that impede business, do you think that, this would be a good example of a procedural regulation that could be removed to substantially help out the economy for these small businesses?
You're talking about a JO?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be. It would be huge. But we still, again, no matter what we do, we
would
have
be
to
huge
the issue. It would be huge. sorry. But, you know, we still have to make sure that we're balancing out the safety aspect of it, because that's got to be paramount. It's got to be paramount.
And, you know, I think it's interesting, too, if a lot of people listen to this and they listen to your focus is on safety. Uh-huh. And I think it's really interesting because the FAA harps so much that their whole focus is about safety, yet they've taken the power away from local ATC. The local FISDO guys have a totally different ideology than FAA Washington.
Between FISDOs, they have a totally different philosophy.
Yeah. And it's just creating this environment of confusion, and in an environment of confusion, it just doesn't seem like anything is going to be conducive to safety in that environment.
Exactly. Even, you know, individual airports, somebody posted on the legal forum today that they had called LaGuardia under 101 rules. And LaGuardia told them, whoever he talked to at LaGuardia said, no, you have to go through the portal. And the guy said, I'm hobby. He goes, no, you have to go through the portal. So the confusion is just off the chart. It really is. And that's making it unsafe.
Wow.
And the more rules you make, the more confusing it gets.
Let's say that we lived in a world where you could hocus pocus some magic and get whatever you wanted right now. What would that look like?
I would say the app, first and foremost. Get that authorization app out there. It's workable. It's usable. They have a workable solution right now, and if they could get that out, that would be done. It would be over. If you need to break those, whatever that AGL limit is, or if you're within the red circle, then call the airports, because if you've got the app out, that would get rid of the vast majority of the supposed thousands of calls a day that FAA is going to say happen.
Because it would provide information like that, so people could know where they can fly.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I love you too, babe. Says right there at the top.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Personal
computer, okay?
We know who that's for. So if you could get the app out, that'd be great. Release the UASFMs, the grid maps, and let people make the decision they're trained to make. And if there's any doubt, then they need to call. It's that simple. There's going to be stupid people. You can't regulate stupidity. You can only define it in punishment. Punish it once it happens. There's going to be stupid people. And if we didn't do things because of stupid people, we'd still be on horseback, because everything else would be illegal.
Yep.
Get the app out there, release the grid maps, and let ATC handle the airspace they're familiar with.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. Well, Vic, thank you very much for coming on the show, as always. Mm-hmm. If you want more of Vic's knowledge, Vic is an award-winning photographer, and he actually has a class on Drone U. And actually, in a couple weeks here, Vic, we're going to have your bio on the website, because the new website launches.
Awesome. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too, actually. So, Vic, thank you very much for coming on the show. Yes, I'll send you some swag. What?
No, so you can buy some swag on the website.
Oh, yeah, you'll be able to buy swag on the website, too. That is true. But also, all those new courses released with the new website.
Awesome.
So excited about that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, thank you, sir. I think this is a really important issue.
I think a lot of people are
thinking about it, and they're wondering, you know, what to do, you know, what's right, because they go somewhere and, you know, like you said, they're only 500-600 feet inside a Delta airspace. And, you know, they're like, well, this isn't really that bad. I'm not even in the same airspace or navigable airspace. You know, should I fly? What's right for safety?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're considering safety, then I think that a lot of people feel that they can make the responsible decision. The question is how to do it legally. So
give us that. You've given us the knowledge. Let us use it.
Yeah. Exactly. Let me ask you, actually, before I end this show, let me ask you one more question. Do you think it would be good if the FAA had a practical exam in addition to the written exam for Part 107?
No. I don't think that 107 as a practical would work. One, you're going to have to rewrite the rules. So that'll happen, you know, by the time we're 90. And by then I'll be too shaky to use the controllers anyway, so I'd fail it. But I think it's perfectly reasonable if you want to do BBLOS, if you want to do Client at Night, or even if you want to do Bravo, Charlie, whatever. I think it's reasonable to have that test, and then you would have that classification of a license, just like a CDL. I mean, I had a CDL to try drive the bus at church, or the church bus, and I didn't have, you know, I couldn't drive an air brake. I couldn't drive a diesel, or diesel, I think. Anyway, I couldn't drive an air brake. I couldn't have it. You know, there are certain classes of a CDL. So, yeah, I think if you want a class, if you want to get a certain classification of a flight, I think a practical would be usable. Would be feasible, I should say, on that. But it's, you got to get the process in place. Otherwise, you know, if you start adding layers, you know, look, all we're trying to do right now is get fly, and we can't get that done. So yeah. You start adding the practical layer. You've got to have the process in place before you announce or before you put it into effect. You can't do it like they did with the airspace. Announce it and then work on the process. Not going
to
work.
Yeah. Well, I think we're seeing the reaction to that now. And I wanted to bring you on the show because I think the things that you're saying, the unintended consequences, are already happening. And yeah. I think you and I both know that.
I know. I know people have done it. I've done it.
Yeah.
I didn't do it illegal. I did it with ATC permission. They just didn't follow the procedure.
Yeah. Same here. So Anyway, all right, Vic. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, guys. Thanks. If you have a question, listeners out there, go to askdroneu.com. If you want to hear Vic Moss speak some more, you can check out his class at thedroneu.com. And if you want to hear more about Vic, check out his website, mossphotography.biz, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, thank you, Vic.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us today. Hope you enjoyed that episode of Ask Drone You.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.